Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is my co-host, Brad Harvin. Brad, how are you doing?
Hey, Kyle. I'm doing great down here in Jacksonville. How about yourself, bud?
Yeah, pretty good. We're closing in on the draft season. The weather is warming. We are now in spring for sure. The swing of things getting there. And we started the swing of the draft season, really, last week. Talked about rookie wide receivers. Now we're going to transition, run over to the running backs this time. It's something that I specialize in a little more. So yeah, I certainly think it sounds good as well, Brad. Yeah, it's the position that I maybe put the most emphasis on in terms of rookie research. I believe it's the rookie position that poses the most impact. In super flex formats, that's obviously the quarterback, but even then it's, the top tier that'll be starting within the first year likely, and then everyone else. And so with running backs though, I think just the quick reaction to this group is it's deeper than what most people will say. They ponder it. Oh, there's only going to be a few. And if you look at certainly expected draft costs, I know we talked last week a lot about the grinding the mocks and all those things for where receivers were going. It seems like there might only be maybe two, three, maybe three, maybe four running backs going in the first three rounds. So, following the draft capital, it'll kind of lead to that. But just looking at the production profiles and my film grades that I have for these guys, I think it's a lot closer and it's a deeper group at the top, especially. So we'll have to see. Obviously, draft capital is going to weed things out. But what are your general impressions of this rookie running back class, Brad?
Yeah, absolutely. What I when I first looked at it, I was seeing that it wasn't too heavy. It wasn't there weren't a lot of names, but the more and more I did the research, probably similar to you, I kind of noticed that I noticed some names that really did some good things in college, and not just running the ball, but catching the ball out of the backfield and getting those extra points that are going to come valuable fantasy time. So I think there's some hidden gems that that teams are going to be able to grab, middle to late rounds, and they could just blossom into a star similar to or possibly even an undrafted free agent. Jacksonville definitely struck gold last year with James Robinson out of Illinois State, and there could be a few James Robinsons on the list. You just never know. But what I really found interesting is just how dynamic the running back position has, really become in college football and in the NFL as well. Just the need to try and have that running back on the field and have them as a threat in the passing game as well, more so than previous years. So yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity for some names to be called as the draft goes on.
And before we run through those names, just a quick look at how I personally evaluate the running back college tape and try and when I'm gathering the games and the not just highlights but actually looking at the complete game cut-ups of players, try to look for best opponents ranked similarly, opponents that are lesser ranked, and you get kind of a good mix of where, not just against one ranking of opponent or one record type of opponent or one kind of caliber, because in college it is quite large. But really there's four categories that I look at on every play: footwork, flexibility, contact balance, and burst. And a quick explanation of them: footwork, it's the steps that a player takes in terms of not wasting any steps. And I think one of the areas where players might waste steps in terms of commit extra footsteps is a lot of times changing direction and cutting. Those that can do it kind of on a dime, it shows up in their footwork as one or two steps and that direction is changed right away immediately with the footwork, as opposed to and I think one thing, maybe not just change direction but change of speed, players slowing down sometimes take a lot of steps to stop. So the players that don't require that's good for footwork. Another aspect of that is when players take contact or they keep churning their feet, that helps gain extra yards, helps momentum. Stop moving your feet, not a good thing. So that's the kind of the first marker flexibility is just looking at flexibility throughout the whole body, starting with like the pads, like the shoulder pads and that level, making sure you're not running too high with your shoulder pads, but also making sure the players, so, you know, as contact's coming, are they flexing, bending, lowering to, you know, lower their center of gravity, but also the flexibility in ankles, hips, knees, anything that get help with change of direction. So, you know, elusiveness kind of enters into that. Contact balance, I think that one's more straightforward, is, you know, how do players react to contact? Are they taking contact, getting pushed back immediately? Are they able to actually fight through contact, stay upright, gain extra yards? You know, when they're leaning, are they, you know, even are they, you know, even when sometimes when they're parallel to the ground, are they able to kind of maintain momentum and maintain balance on cuts as well? And finally, burst is just the quick area speed. So, you know, not necessarily track long speed, but in a short, quick area, A, make players miss, which again helps elusiveness, but B, hitting the hole when it develops at the opportune moment, making plays that even when, you know, a player has a right angle on them, a defender has the good angle on the running back, can the running back have enough burst, enough, you know, split second speed in short area to make those good, what should be a sure tackle, miss. So those are the, again, four areas: footwork, flexibility, contact balance, and burst. So before anything else, Brad, do you think there's anything that running backs do in terms of what makes them good running backs that I'm not looking at? Is there a flaw to my system? I know I used to look at vision a lot, but I also found that got very difficult in terms of what was good vision or not. So generally, I kind of leave it as a marker. If I see something that's normally that's bad, I kind of mark that up. But otherwise, it's something I've kind of looked away from. Do you think there's anything else just running back evaluation that you look for?
Well, first of all, Kyle, I really wish you were down here in 2017 for the Jaguars and had your assessment on Leonard Fournette, because foot speed and just, you know, getting to the hole and the burst in the hole, that would have been very low, judging from the 3 years that he was here. As far as looking at it, I think you pretty much kind of covered everything. I mean, it seems like a lot of stuff is in each one of those four categories. I mean, it certainly is difficult to try and, you know, rate vision. I don't know if it's something you can see. I mean, I would imagine it would kind of depend on the camera angle, kind of see where the hole is, see if they're, you know, able to, you know, make a bounce or something like that. So, I mean, that's kind of difficult to relay, but I mean, I think you got everything covered in those four categories.
All right, so then let's start getting into that. So I rank the players. All those categories are scored 1 to 100 based on success rates of how often I see them on film. And add it all together, it makes a score out of 400 overall. And it's actually, you know, there's quite a close-knit group. And even within this, you know, I'd say the top, like I say maybe the top 11. They're all pretty close, with maybe two tiers within that top 11 kind of divide, but even then it's all really close. I felt last year the top five running backs that I had in my film score were the first five to go. I don't know that my film scores are going to be as consensus with the draft order this year. I believe, you know, of my top seven, I think they were the seven of the top eight running backs to go, including AJ Dillon, Zach Moss. So I was definitely high on those guys. This year, again, not so sure. So starting off the bat, a familiar name maybe, Najee Harris is my number one running back for the 2021 class. Overall score of 258, 89 on footwork, 58 on flexibility, 69 on contact balance, and 42 on burst. Now, I think, you know, maybe what's even more appropriate is the rankings within the class of those. You know, he's fourth in footwork, 13th in flexibility, second in contact balance, eighth in burst. And I think for Najee Harris, he's a large running back. So the contact balance is one of the most apparent things. Again, second in the class in my rankings for it. But for a running back of his size, I was actually impressed with his burst. Again, I put him eighth in, and this is eighth out of, I guess I believe it was 25 running backs. And so, you know, I was impressed, actually. I thought for someone of his size, the burst wouldn't necessarily be there. Good technical foundation of the game. For him, he does run upright a lot, but he is so large that that's going to be kind of the nature of his game. But I think, you know, tough runner. He projects very easily as a goal line back, especially. If he's someone that could right away possess touchdown upside right off the bat, probably more so than I think any player in this class. So I think from fantasy purposes also possesses some upside. My running back rankings won't necessarily follow the film scores because I am looking at the production as well. And you look at Najee Harris's production, three things I look at for production, especially rushing yards per game, touchdowns per game, and receptions in college. So rushing yards per game, 75.36. Not the highest. There are some players, some of these running backs that got over 100 yards a game, which is quite impressive. But it's still maybe about average for this class. Touchdowns per game, though, 1.12 of the running backs looked at, I believe it's the third highest. And, one guy, especially ahead of him, is maybe one of the only ones that might go ahead of him in the NFL draft. Receptions as well. And this is something that, again, looking at Najee Harris, you see a big guy. You don't necessarily think of the soft hands, but one threshold to look at for college is the 20 to 25 reception range in a season. If they can have at least one season of at least 20 receptions, and some say 25. I know Zach Reed from the Dynasty Dummies, his threshold is 20. Dave Wright, FF Spaceman, 25. But kind of as a good marker for players who've done that in college to have a tendency to be able to repeat that in the NFL on more than one occasion. So he had 43 receptions in 2020. So that was I was astounded when I first saw that. So I think Najee Harris really does possess the whole package where, again, the touchdown upside is the goal line backs there, but he can still catch passes. Like he can be a true workhorse, stay on the field on third down. So I have him as my number one in film score, and I would rank him in number one as well right now if I were drafting running backs. Landing spot might be the final marker, draft capital and landing spot combined. But if he ends up in a good spot where, again, he's the clear case to be a goal line back and it's an offense that looks like it's going to have enough opportunities, it'll be hard pressed for anyone to assert him in my rankings as the number one running back. How do you feel about Najee Harris, Brad?
Kyle, I have Najee Harris at the top with a large space between the next one. I mean, the kid is, he came to Alabama out of California. He, big five-star recruit. Everybody wanted him, but he really had to. He had to wait his turn. I mean, his freshman year, he was behind Bo Scarborough, Damian Harris, and then the following year with Josh Jacobs. I mean, he was third behind Damian Harris and Josh Jacobs, and now we see where those two are. They're in the NFL, so he finally got his opportunity. But yeah, I mean, 6'2", pushing 220, just the burst. The burst factor that you mentioned, I'd definitely see that. He can plant his foot and cut and just take it to the house at any time, which is quite phenomenal for somebody his size. And to get back to the receptions, I mean, yeah, the 40, I think, what would you say, 43 catches last year. I mean, he does have the soft hands. He has the body control. He was much more than just a check down for Mac Jones. They ran wheel routes for him. I mean, they had designed plays to get him the ball in space on the outside on the fringe because of his catching ability and his ability to run after the catch. Definitely a tough kid, hard to bring down. Can run over you, can run by you, can make a move and run past you. So yeah, I definitely see him at the top. Once again, depending on the where he ends up, what team. I mean, I've seen him kind of mocked to the Dolphins, which I think he would certainly battle for the lead back role. I mean, I think right away, more so than just the goal line role, because I think he's that talented, that dynamic. So yeah, I have him at the top of my list, and he's definitely looking down at the others.
And I'll be honest, Dolphins might be at maybe the top of my list for landing spots for running back. I was thinking Arizona, them signing James Conner, especially for someone like Najee Harris, like that, then he would suddenly, I think, compete for those goal line touches there. If without Conner and it was just him and Chase Edmonds, that would have been, I think, the perfect recipe. Not so sure about that anymore, but Miami might be the spot. I'm thinking the Jets as well. Those might be the two landing spots I look at for where the opportunity's there. Not much in terms of competition. Miles Gaskin with the Dolphins, maybe Tevin Coleman with the Jets. So good spots where I think a player could exceed right away and offensive lines that are getting better ascending, especially with Miami. That's, yeah, I think the Dolphins might be the number one landing spot. If Harris went there, I don't think I'd take any running back ahead of him.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Now, this guy really close to my film score, but I won't have him close in my running back ranking. And I think if, you know, depending on the draft capital, he might fall quite a bit. Now, Deion Jackson, now someone this might be sound surprising, is a number two guy, ranked number one in my footwork, 93, seventh in flexibility with a 63, seventh in contact balance, 59, and 11th in burst. So again, I think the technical mastery of the game, he's a senior out of Duke, Deion Jackson. And I think he knows how to play the game properly in the sense, like, again, mentioning with the footwork, he's always churning his feet through contact. It seems like it's ingrained in him, and the cuts are really smooth. But also, what's also really smooth about him is his route running and pass catching, which isn't necessarily reflected in these scores. But you see that, not all his, in 26 receptions in 2018, not as many the last couple seasons, but still shows that ability to go down the field deep and track the deep ball and run routes kind of outside of just dump off. So I really like everything about Deion Jackson's game. Really, the only big hole in his profile is he never handled 200 carries in a season in college. 51.53 rushing yards a game. Of the running backs we're looking at here, I believe it's outside the top 20, actually, in rush yards per game. Half a touchdown per game, it's, again, pretty low. There's some that are lower. So, you know, especially given the opportunity, he was pretty efficient touchdown-wise. Like, tough to get more than half a touchdown a game when you're never really getting more than, 10 carries a game. So, limited on tape, limited on sample size in terms of overall carry, that never shown to be a true workhorse in college. But from a snap-to-snap, play-to-play perspective, I really love what I saw. Honestly, if people, again, pass catching ability to run deep, never a true workhorse, but great film to film tape, might go undrafted. Basically, if everyone listens last year, this is basically a repeat of JaMychal Hasty. And unfortunately, I feel like Deion Jackson might suffer a similar fate to JaMychal Hasty and go undrafted. I think the key for him is to get that draft capital, or if he does go undrafted, be a priority undrafted free agent in a really great landing spot. Unfortunately, it's tough to think better than the 49ers, where they'll, they don't spend very any draft capital on running back, so it makes that an undrafted free agent could go there. Maybe Deion Jackson has to go to the 49ers and compete with JaMychal Hasty if that's the case. So I love Jackson, but I'm not gonna maybe as aggressively draft him so blindly, especially without draft capital. But Brad, what do you think of Deion Jackson?
When I saw your list, you had me scrambling trying to find out who Deion Jackson was, what he was about. So I was able to, to look things up, and yeah, he did play at Duke in the ACC. Perhaps the sample size with the amount of carries per game, I think you said were around 10, has a lot to do with the fact that the Blue Devils aren't really known for their football prowess as much as their basketball superiority, with the exception of this year. But what I did see is similar. I mean, he seems to have the footwork to make things happen. You really don't see his name anywhere up and down many of the list for rookie running backs. Possibly a sixth, seventh round, or like you said, a undrafted free agent. But yeah, I mean, And I know that he doesn't have the pedigree with the amount of carries, but that could be a good thing. I mean, he has a little bit more in the tank than some of these other workhorses that are on the list. So it could be coming into a program with a little bit of a chip on the shoulder, possibly being undrafted or something like that, and his body may be a little more ready to go. So, I mean, really, I it's kind of a wait and see for me. I definitely want to look some more, but I appreciate you introducing me to Deion Jackson and everybody else.
We'll move on to the next player, maybe someone a little bit more familiar. Actually, I was expecting this player to declare in 2020, not 2021 here, unfortunately, but we get him this year, Kylan Hill. And he was someone that probably would have been within my top five last year. I really liked the tape. He was geared up to be You know, if I compare this year's class to last year, Najee Harris probably would have been maybe fifth, probably right after Cam Akers, who I had at fourth. But, you know, Kylan Hill, based on last year, probably would have been right there as well, ahead of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Now, and so, you know, I've obviously liked him last year, and he didn't do much this year, so there wasn't really much of a change. But yeah, I have him third in the 2021 class. About average scores almost everywhere except contact balance, and he really dominates. I think that's his truly dominant trait, is that he rarely goes down at first contact, and is often able to get extra yards after going through contact. So, you know, someone who seems like he's a violent hitter. Now, does that weigh on his durability a little bit? Because that is, it seems like sometimes he's almost looking for contact too much. Not crazy about the footwork. And I think the flexibility, sometimes he runs a little too upright, a little too big. Again, he doesn't look to be as elusive as he does to make contact. And the burst is, right on where I have Deion Jackson, I'm at 12th in this class. And I mean, he does have the receiving profile, at least enough of it, 23 receptions last season. 63.38 rush yards a game in college, and just a 0.55 touchdowns a game. So certainly more yards than Jackson, but you know, and more opportunity than Jackson, but about the same amount of touchdown numbers. But again, I think I'm really impressed with him as you know, with the contact balance. He's another guy kind of similar to Harris, where if he went to a team where there was no clear goal line back, Kylan Hill might have immediate touchdown upside. If he could, you know, he can get that from day one if there's no one really established there. But that might be his only recipe to success, or at least to immediate success. But what do you think about Kylan Hill?
I think you're spot on with Kylan Hill as far as possibly should have come out last year. I think going back to Mississippi State, they had a coaching change. They brought in Mike Leach, who is no stranger to throwing the ball around more, kind of changed the offense. Maybe he didn't get the touches that he did the previous years. I think I read he had like a locker room altercation and ended up like missing more than half of the season this past year. But he runs violently, and he does at times look for contact. I don't know if that's a little bit of the Fournette maybe kind of rubbing off on him, but I totally agree that if he goes to the correct situation, similar to Najee Harris, he has the potential to make an immediate impact, possibly fighting for the starting position, or at least a, you know, splitting the carries. And just with his nose for the goal line and how hard he runs, he could certainly be in the goal line package and pick up some points that way. So yeah, Kylan Hill, he has a lot of upside. Don't look at his numbers from last year. Look at the tape from the previous year in 2019, and you're going to get a solid player that I mean, once again, I think he's going to come in a little bit with a chip on his shoulder. I think he feels that he should be rated higher than he is on a lot of people's mock drafts. So I think he's going to come in with something to prove, and he's definitely a bear to try and bring down. So I mean, it's going to be interesting where he lands.
And a little bit of narrative street here, but I do know there's, and this, he wasn't the only player, but I know there was some issues specifically around Mississippi, I know, and he kind of took a stance and, you know, good stance with good messages, and wasn't the most well received in the college community. So wonder if I wouldn't blame any blaming him at all for this. It almost does seem natural, but if, you know, his heart wasn't fully in and he wasn't giving 100%, because, you know, it seemed like, you know, the school that he was, you know, supposed to educate and enlighten, and when he's trying to educate and enlighten, kind of turns its back on him. I kind of see where there's, you know, extenuating circumstances why he didn't perform as well last year. That kind of goes with another player we'll get to later as well. So just I still like Kylan Hill quite a bit, but I have him at number three. I don't think he's going to be the third running back off the board in drafts, and probably likely won't be ranked number three after the draft.
Yeah.
Now, again, film scores, just to recap, Najee Harris, at a 400, 258, Deion Jackson, 256, Kylan Hill, 253, I'm not sure if I mentioned that, and then rounding off the top five in this mini tier, both players at 252 in my ranking. We'll start with Jamar Jefferson, and you know, pretty good scores, eighth in footwork, fourth in flexibility, 16th in contact balance. That's maybe the only one where a little lower, and fifth in burst. Quite fast. And really, you know, that's where it really impresses, I find. The rush yards per game, super impressive as well. 108.26. It's among the, again, I mentioned there's a few running backs that have over 100 yards per game in their career, and he's one of them. He's certainly very productive. And 1.07 touchdowns per game, just under where Najee Harris is one of the highest in this class. Had a 25 reception season in 2018. I think combined 2019, 20 single-digit receptions, but he showed that at least once in his career. And then that's the indicator. As long as you can do it once and show that you've got that, that's all that's needed. And I think that goes with usage, right? Probably as, you know, okay, maybe, and if you see that with certain schools, right? The first year is where the running back might catch the most passes, because as they become, you know, develop later in the career, they want to use them as workhorse, giving them the ball every carry, not using them so much on reception. So I think might have been the case there with Jefferson as well. But, you know, he might be someone who's maybe a bit, certainly more highly touted than Jackson and Hill, is maybe more likely to jump into potential top five of running backs in terms of draft capital in the NFL and rankings. Again, I've got him at tied for fourth in my film score. So what do you think about Jamar Jefferson, Brad?
I think everybody caught on to what I was thinking. Jamar Jefferson was going to be my little sleeper in the draft. You know, wherever he went, I was going to keep an eye on him, what his landing spot was going to be, and I was going to try and snatch him up. But it seems like he's definitely making a name for himself. Certainly, he sprung on the scene in his freshman year, 2018. Had a tremendous freshman year. He followed that up with a pretty good sophomore year. And then, you know, they only played six or seven games last year out in Oregon State. But as you mentioned, you know, over 100 yards a game. The guy, he's got the full package. The speed, the burst. He's got the ability to make people miss. He's got the home run threat every time he touches the ball as well. So I really like him. I think he I was definitely happy to see him so high on your list there. So he was definitely something I mentioned, somebody I was going to keep an eye on where he landed, to kind of see where he's going to fit. And he could certainly jump into a situation where, you know, where he's splitting the carries, you know, possibly getting, you know, 6 to 8 touches a game, which would be certainly beneficial for him, give him a chance to showcase his talents. And yeah, I'm definitely keeping an eye out for him. But yeah, really like Jefferson.
And the player who's tied with Jefferson's film score for myself at 252 is Ramondre Stevenson. And Stevenson actually holds the distinction of being the only player I have ranked in the top 10 in all four categories of footwork, flexibility, contact balance, and burst. In those categories, he's 9th in footwork, 7th in flexibility, 7th in contact balance, and 5th in burst. So actually, I tied it with a fifth of with the burst score with Jamar Jefferson. So I, you know, similar kind of you know, speed, elusiveness combination, which I think for both of those is maybe both of their strongest suits, is that elusive ability. Now, less of a production profile from Stevenson, 62.11 rush yards per game, you know, far cry from Jefferson's at 108. Also, 0.68 touchdowns per game. So it's again a little bit. This is, you know, still higher than the Deion Jackson line, I suppose. You know, the 50 and 0.5. I guess that's kind of where we're gonna kind of lie there. He doesn't reach the 20 reception threshold. That's the only thing. But there's a circumstance there. He had 18 receptions in 2020, but Ramondre Stevenson only played 6 games. So 18 receptions in 6 games is pretty good. And so he would, you know, on a full season would reach that 20 reception threshold. So does have that pass catching in his profile. You know, looking at the tape, I didn't see anything like the difference making route running ability that looks like wide receiver esque route running ability of like a Deion Jackson necessarily. But again, enough of a receiving profile to think that he can catch passes. So you know, I don't know. I know Deion Jackson was quite the surprise for you, Brad. Was Ramondre Stevenson a surprising player for you, or was he someone that you were aware of and had on your radar?
Yeah, not necessarily a surprise. I mean, I definitely recognize the game, or sorry, the name from some of the big 12 games that I was able to watch. And I mean, the fact is that Stevenson's a thumper. He's gonna come at you downhill. I mean, he's I think close to 6'1", almost 240. But he does have that a little bit of elusiveness as well once he gets into the secondary. I mean, Oklahoma, I mean, some of those stats can be skewed just a little bit because of the way Oklahoma plays. They're very, very focused on the quarterback. I mean, that's what Lincoln Riley does out there. I mean, whether it was Kyler Murray or Jalen Hurts or even as far back as Baker Mayfield, kind of everything kind of went through the quarterback, you know, even having the mobile quarterback. So it's possible some of his production, you know, tapered off just on the type of style that Oklahoma ran. But if you're looking for someone to pound the ball in from the 2 yard line, Stevenson could be your man. He could be the guy to come in there, be a touchdown vulture, you know, early on in his career, and maybe work into the role of being a three down back, or, you know, or a first and second down, you know, kind of grinder kind of back. And you know, I'm a little bit kind of wait and see on the receptions, kind of see how that goes. I mean, I definitely see the math there, how you you know, did that through his you know, six, eight games that he had, you know roughly about three catches a game. But I think in the NFL, I mean, he's gonna, the first couple years, he's gonna be the pounder. He's gonna be the battering ram at the goal line, and that's where he's gonna get some of his fantasy value. So no, not surprised that that his name's there. Maybe a little surprised that he's kind of high, but kind of higher where compared to some of the other guys coming up. But certainly, as far as fantasy value and, you know, getting some touchdowns, he could be your guy, especially at the goal line.
So just to, again, I have that again, to me, the top five there in my film scores kind of as a mini tier. And I think there's importance for all five of those players we mentioned. For Harris, I think we know it seems like he's going to get early draft capital. The expectation is he's probably going either round one or two. Maybe he slips to round three, but that's seeming unlikely looking at most of the mock drafts of, you know, throughout the industry of where they're had. So I think for Harris, it's really just the fit. Is he going to a good offensive line that's going to allow, and a good offense really in general, it's going to allow him a lot of touchdown opportunities? If so, he's going to be a great fantasy producer. So that's really what we're looking for. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, draft capital is important, but knowing that he's going to get that, it's really looking for fit now. For Deion Jackson, it's really just about getting drafted, I think. If he's drafted, that's a good sign. I'm getting the sense that that's about the 50-50 line where, you know, he might be drafted, he might not. Kylan Hill and I would say probably, you know, for Hill and Stevenson, like you're saying, Brad, similar of the, you know, if you think Stevenson's best shot is as a goal line guy, I think really that is for Kylan Hill. I don't even think it's draft round that matters as much as depth chart team fit. If you know, thinking of Jordan Howard a couple years ago, he got less draft capital than, you know, maybe five or six running backs that, you know, combined didn't produce as much as him. You think of guys like Paul Perkins and Kenneth Dixon and Devontae Booker, and those guys all got, you know, drafted him ahead of him in the NFL draft. They were all drafted ahead of him in rookie drafts, and for the most part, maybe not Paul Perkins, but Howard was the best fantasy producer out of them, even though he had the later NFL draft capital, I believe fourth or fifth round, but was on the depth chart where he could be the goal line back. And I think that'll be important for Hill and Stevenson. Jamar Jefferson, though, strikes me as, if he gets the draft capital, a team will use him. And if not, a team won't use him except very sparingly. So Jefferson, I think it's more round dependent, whereas Hill and Stevenson, I think it's more team fit that I'm looking for. But that's, maybe I've got it skewed, but that's kind of how my logic works for those five anyway.
I hear you. Yeah, I'm very enamored with Jefferson, and just excited to see where he ends up. So, I mean, I think you're spot on with both Hill and Stevenson. And I mean, Harris, like I said, I mean, I think if he lands in Miami, I think it's going to be his starting role, definitely by, I would say, week two, if not the start of the season. I mean, I think he's that superior to what they already have there, and he could certainly make an impact, and I think he's someone you want to have on your radar.
All right, so that was the top five for my film scores here for this 2021 rookie running back class. Now, I want to move we'll say top 10, but I actually want to add plus one. So the top 11, these next six I have kind of in another mini tier, where the overall film scores range from those six spots between 248 and 244. So just 4 points difference on a scale of 400. So all really close for these next six. So maybe just focus on them less individually, more as kind of a collective group. But we'll start with the player I have at six, Kenneth Gainwell. His strongest rank in my rankings was Footwork. He was third, behind only Deion Jackson and a player that comes later. I'm not sure if we'll talk about them, but a player that all they have is footwork. Everything else is not great. That was Jonathan Ward last year. And as much as I like those types of players, okay, they've showed the footwork, but if nothing else is that great, usually leads to undrafted. That's what happened to Jonathan Ward. That player, just for reference, is Malik Davis. Not sure if we're getting to them or to him or into that range, but that, again, strikes me as that's probably his faith as well. But from a pure footwork, I'm looking at Deion Jackson. And then after that, it's Kenneth Gainwell. I mean, he shows everything you need with the footwork, and I know he's a quick twitch guy, smaller running back, so a little easy, you know, it's not that difficult to carry that mass, but you know, his weakness I think is contact balance. It's actually very similar to Jamar Jefferson in a lot of scores, 17th in contact balance. Now, what impressed me about Gainwell, 86.11 yards rush yards per game, so that's pretty decent. I mean, that's more than Najee Harris, 0.94 touchdowns a game, so almost a touchdown per game pace in college. That's pretty good. That's up there. But 51 receptions in 2019. This is advanced receiver. He's probably the best receiving back of this class. I don't know would you say that, Brad, that Kenneth Gainwell is the best, like just pure pass catcher, route runner of all the running backs?
He's certainly up there. I do like Najee Harris's ability to come out of the backfield, but yeah, Gainwell is certainly he can certainly step into a role and be a fantastic change of pace back. You know, I don't want to call him a scat back because, I mean, I don't think that's exactly what he is, because I think he does have that ability to make some receptions and make something happen with the ball in his hands. I mean, you know, wow. I mean, what does this say about Memphis? Is just, you know, churning out running backs left and right, whether it's you know, Antonio Gibson or Daryl Henderson. It's phenomenal what they're gonna do and or what they've been doing. But I think Gainwell he does have the opportunity to, you know, once again, you know, team specific, but he could certainly lock down that change of pace back and, you know, get a few touches early on in the game and really just kind of see how the flow goes. And you know, if he has his motor running, which he has for a couple years in Memphis, you know, they're going to keep him in there and keep feeding him, whether it's on the ground or through the air. But he definitely has the once again, he's a home run threat. He's not afraid to run between the tackles, you know, even despite his size. He does seem to kind of bounce it outside a little bit, so he's going to have to get a little more disciplined when it comes to that. But, I mean, he's definitely someone to keep your eye on come draft day.
He reminds me of Clyde Edwards-Helaire a lot from last year's class.
I've seen that comparison, yes.
I think Clyde was one of the best pass catchers of that class last year. Maybe him and DeAndre Swift might be at the top, but I think Swift was between Swift and Gainwell and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think Swift is the best interior runner. He had my highest score of both these classes combined. But again, I can see that with Gainwell. It's just really the only difference between him and Edwards-Helaire. It's not looking like he's going to get the draft capital, and certainly not the first round draft capital, but also maybe not the great team fit like the Chiefs, but still think Gainwell has a chance to make an impact right away. If he can, that receiving work could translate. I wonder if teams maybe use him as more than just a running back. We're going to play him as a slot receiver at times and, you know, keep the another running back on the field, so he doesn't have to, you know, get pass catching just by being the third down kind of designated player. I mean, I wonder if there's a plus role for him there.
Yeah, that is that's certainly a possibility for him to do that. I mean, I think he's once again has the ability to do several things and he excels at a lot of it. And it's going to come down to coaching and where he is and you know what what the running back room looks like around him.
So next up, Travis Etienne. Now, he's probably, he's the one I was referencing earlier with Najee Harris. It looks like for all expectations, Travis Etienne or Najee Harris will be the first running back selected. It seems like those two are locked in to be at least in the first two rounds. Not sure we can say that about anyone else. Etienne had decent scores around, but second in burst. That was really his, you know, his outside speed, but even inside speed, that quick area burst is super apparent with Etienne. One of the best in the class in that regard. Decent production profile, 90.04 rush yards per game, but 1.41 touchdowns a game. Scoring machine. Out of all the running backs that I calculated for here, he had the second highest. And we'll maybe, you know, towards the end, we should get to the only player who had a higher than him. But I mentioned Najee Harris at 1.12 and 1.41 for Etienne. So definitely a step up. Also 48 receptions last year, getting close to that Gainwell level too. I have Etienne at 7, which probably seems low film score wise, but if I was just looking ranked overall based on the production, he would be my number 2 ranked running back.
Yes, I'm with you there. I'm interested. What did you have him with the contact score?
I am at 10th in this class, so at 58. So not horrible. For reference sake, better than Jamar Jefferson, but not good as guys like Deion Jackson and Ramondre Stevenson.
Gotcha. Etienne, I mean, he's definitely he's a highlight reel from Clemson. Of course, Clemson's one of the big dogs in college. Seem to always either be on TV, be in the college football playoffs. He's definitely had some solid moments in the playoff. He also had some subpar moments as well. But the burst does not surprise me. I've definitely seen several instances where, between the tackles, he'll just come out of nowhere and he's gone. He's in the secondary. He's past the secondary, taken into the house. And he is very deceptive with his receptions. I mean, I think that number could have been even more if Clemson would have incorporated that a little bit more in their game plan. Great hands, good body control. They ran specific routes for him, similar to Harris. I mean, he wasn't just a check down for Lawrence up in Clemson. So yeah, I mean, he's definitely number 2. I would think that he's probably going to be the second running back coming off the board in the draft in a couple weeks, possibly with one of these North Carolina boys that we're going to talk about in a minute. But yeah, I mean, he definitely has it all. I do see him having some trouble breaking that initial tackle at times. I mean, of course, I'm not really one to talk here because I couldn't break it either. But I mean, several times saw him get caught up in the backfield, couldn't get away, kind of things where I would be able to see Harris kind of shake that first defender off. So it could be just a size differential between Harris and Etienne, but I don't necessarily foresee that as a huge concern. But I was kind of surprised that he was only 10th on that contact category. But other than that, I think he's another one that could come in once again, team dependency, and could certainly fight for that lead back role from day one.
Yeah, it seems like he's definitely going to get the capital again, and maybe similar to Harris. It seems like as long as he gets the draft capital, it'll be an optimum fit. Although with Etienne, I think maybe a wider range of fits is possible in a sense because of the pass catching upside. But if he was the lead back, he'd be probably okay as a goal line back. So the touchdown upside is still there. So I think he can achieve that in a multitude of ways. So maybe more landing spot potential for him. We'll get to those North Carolina guys. So I actually have them ranked and with identical overall film score. So it's funny how it ended up working out for both of them. Definitely not intentional. But Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, both with 246s. Now, excelling in different areas. For Williams, I actually had him fifth in my footwork score. So he really gets the technical aspect well and really understands that. And actually fifth in burst. So that's apparent there as well. A similar, kind of almost remind me a little bit of Ramondre Stevenson. I'd say less, a little less on the contact balance in terms of Williams. But, Ramondre Stevenson, I think, is a good comparison. Slightly higher receiving or production profile from Williams, but 67.5 rushing yards a game and 0.64 touchdowns a game. It's right around where Stevenson was in both cases, 25 receptions in 2020. Now, his teammate, Michael Carter, also 25 receptions in 2020, so it's interesting there. But for him, 16th in footwork, so it's not as refined, I find, but number one in burst. So even more of a burst and explosive first step than Travis Etienne even. And that's, I think, Michael Carter's true specialty. It seems very similar to Gainwell in that, he'll have the it'll be kind of pigeonholed into the pass catching role, but if he really excels at that, that could be something that develops into consistent fantasy production. So, it sounds like you were saying it, Brad, and you referenced it. I think, Javonte Williams, I think the expectation is right now he'll probably be the third running back off the board. A lot of mock drafts have him there. So, I think the key for Williams is how high is he going? Is he going into round two? Or is he being forced to the end of round three? And maybe there'll only be three running backs to go on day two. But if he is, towards the end of the third, is that really that high of an investment where a team is really saying as a starter? So I think, if the expectation is he'll go on day two, where exactly on day two is he going? I think so. How early is he? Does he get into the second round or is he late third? If he's kind of in the middle and it's an early third, that's probably good. Then it's really landing spot dependent almost. But I think with Williams, the key might be how high of that draft capital is he getting? And with Carter, I think Carter is pure fit. You want to see him get drafted, but you want to see him go to maybe a depth chart where there aren't that many pass-catching running backs. It's almost the opposite of what we were saying with Ramondre Stevenson, where we want him to go to a depth chart where there aren't many goal line backs. With Carter, I think we that's that same thing. We want him to go somewhere where he's a chance to catch a lot of passes.
I really think Williams is going to – I think he's a second rounder. I think there's enough teams out there that see his – measurable wise. I'm 5'10", 220. I mean, that's just, perfect for a running back. And then you look at what he can do on the field when he has the ball in his hands. I mean, sure, he split some carries in North Carolina with Michael Carter, but what he did with those carries were just, at times phenomenal and jaw-dropping. I mean, I think he is going to sneak into the second round. He's going to maybe even early, depending on the teams that are looking there. And he has the opportunity to go in there and challenge for a lead role. And like you were saying with Carter, I do think it's going to be a fit thing. I mean, he does have the burst. I mean, I definitely see where you had him number one as the burst. I mean, he can just flat out fly when he needs to. If he plants that foot and he knows where he's going, he's taking it to the house. But he does kind of lack in the size compared to Williams, which does make him a little bit more of a threat in the reception game. So yeah, certainly agree. If he gets into a place where he has the ability to, to get on the field as a third down or in a hurry up offense, something like that, the yards are going to be there. And with his speed, there's a chance for a home run every single time. So, yeah, I mean, I really like both of these guys. I have no problem with them at all being ranked exactly where they are. So, but I am with you. I think Javonte Williams is going to be the third running back off the board, possibly even the second. So we'll have to see which teams fall in love with either him or Etienne first.
And we'll round out the top 10 of my film scores with Chuba Hubbard. So Canadian, I like that. Fifth in footwork. I know the burst, especially this last season, wasn't quite there. I had him at 15. So maybe that's, if I, because I did look at 2020 film as well as 2019 film for him. If it was purely 2019 film, he's probably higher and he might be maybe creeping in at the top five, maybe sixth here. So I think, the 2020 season, not the greatest, but similar to Kylan Hill, were there some things taking a stance, some things with, you know, said or done by certain members of the school. Does that, you know, that suddenly leaves a bad taste in your mouth? You're not putting as much effort. You don't think the school has your back in terms of you as a human. So I kind of get that for Hubbard. I've heard this narrative too. If he had just opted out of 2020, we wouldn't see him any differently than we see Kenny Gainwell. And so I think Hubbard, the key there is going to be draft capital. If, you know, a team ignores 2020 and says the real Hubbard is 2019, they draft him accordingly. Maybe we see four running backs go on day three and he jumps into the third round, or sorry, day, you know, before day three, I meant to say. And if that happens, suddenly a team might give him a lot of opportunity. 104.8 rush yards per game, 1.09 touchdowns per game. So definitely high up there in both marks among these running backs. 23 receptions in 2019. So I really like Hubbard, and he has a chance to kind of really move up if he gets the draft capital.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe that, you know, the stats you just rattled off are considered a nosedive from 2019. I mean, those stats that Hubbard had, sure, I mean, they were a little less than 2019, but, you know, still impressive for what he did in the Big 12 for Oklahoma State. And, yeah, I mean, I think there's a possibility he could go day two, possibly third round. So definitely someone looking for someone that obviously has some experience in several aspects of the game, whether it's, you know, hitting the hole straight up, bouncing it to the outside, even in the reception game. I definitely saw him used in the screens a little bit. So I mean, he's a wild card in the draft, along with someone else I see on your list. But he could certainly sneak in the third round, which would, I would think, present him an opportunity to battle within the running back room, whichever team he goes to.
And just battling for time here. So one last one of this, and again, this mini tier, and I tier him out into this top 11. So we talk about production, and this is actually why I do want to start with this player. So Jared Patterson. So career, again, this is career average rush yards per game and touchdowns per game. For him, he's highest in both out of all the running backs we talked about today, and actually all running backs I have in the top 25. 121.38 rush yards per game. And we were talking about Jamar Jefferson at 108 as being, oh, that's quite up there. That's elevated, but 121. I mean, that's insane kind of production. 1.66 touchdowns per game. That's, again, talk about Travis Etienne at 1.41 is way higher than almost anyone else. So he's blowing those guys out of the water. The only hole, though, only 13 receptions. So with all those carries, kind of a limited to an early down only guy. And he really comes into the first one that we're talking about where that really is the case, I think. In terms of the film score, the footwork wasn't the greatest. 18. And the burst score at 17. So, you know, middle of the pack and a little below average almost. But third in flexibility and fourth in contact balance. And I think the contact balance especially serves him well with getting all the certainly the touchdown production, and as well as gaining those extra yards. So Jared Patterson, similar to what I said about Kylan Hill and saying about Ramondre Stevenson, I think maybe even it may more important so, because a bit of a lack of fundamentals in terms of the footwork there, but he really needs the right landing spot, the right depth chart where he can become a goal line back. I think that's his path to success. If he's on a depth chart, like if he goes to Tennessee and he's behind Derrick Henry, that's not looking great. Like that's not the type of running back we'd prefer like a Michael Carter going to Tennessee, thinking, okay, that complements Derrick Henry really well. You know, Jared Patterson going to Tennessee, that kills his value.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the stats that he put up at Buffalo, I mean, over 3,800 yards, 52 touchdowns in his career. I mean, that's a workhorse right there. And I mean, why throw it to him when you can have that kind of production on the ground from him? Maybe that was their philosophy. Maybe their quarterback wasn't very good. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, obviously the kid has a he has a nose for the end zone, and if he gets put into the right position as a complimentary back, possibly even as a goal line back, he could have some value in the fantasy world moving forward.
So moving forward with this episode, were there any running backs that you wanted to talk about that were on my film grade list that we didn't get a chance to?
Yeah, I guess just real quick, certainly interested in the big school. Trey Sermon coming out of Ohio State. Of course, he had a tough injury in the college football playoffs, but he's definitely coming into his own. I see him rising up the charts a little bit. I mean, the kid, he started off at Oklahoma, you know, split some time with Stevenson, as a matter of fact, transferred to Ohio State, had a ridiculous game against Northwestern, I believe in the Big Ten Championship, over 300 yards. I mean, I haven't seen that since somebody was going against my high school. And this is, you know, big time college football. So I'd kind of like to kind of hear your thoughts and everything on Trey Sermon, because I feel like he's someone who could once again get into that, you know, start off in a third down role, possibly even a complimentary role, you know, kind of if he mixes it up, maybe there's another bruising running back out there that he can complement. And I mean, he definitely has some hands out of the backfield as well. And yeah, just kind of interested to see, you know, what your thoughts are on Sermon.
Yeah, I think my big concern with Sermon, I actually did write a draft profile about him on Full Press Coverage, is, you know, the durability concerns. He dealt with a few injuries, and I had him at 22nd on my contact balance ranking. So it does seem that, you know, it's not, you know, he's someone that can't really power through contact that well. Unfortunately, he also doesn't have much of the receiving profile. 16 receptions, and that was 2017 as a freshman. And we talked about that. That's kind of, some schools, they pigeonhole the freshman into being the pass catchers. But even then, he still couldn't reach that 20. So a little concerned with Sermon. I have him at 15th. So to be, you know, really needs the draft capital. If he's going to get the draft capital and team's going to say, we're going to trust you with a lot of carries, that's good. If not, not the greatest guy I'd want to kind of pick in a, you know, in a committee. Just ahead of him, I have Javian Hawkins, for instance, third in my burst score. So right after Carter and Etienne, I think he's someone that on fewer carries, like if he and Sermon get similar draft capital, he can make a lot more on fewer carries than Sermon can. Sermon's really going to need the workload, I think, to be productive.
Yeah, I think I think Hawkins definitely has the big play capability. Fairly undersized, but I mean, he's pretty electric when he gets the ball in the hands. So yeah, I can see why he's ranked ahead of him. Absolutely.
Actually, it's just one. It's 238 to 237. So a little bit better footwork with Sermon, but so they're close. But yeah, really, I think needs somewhat different types of players. Both actually 16 receptions is the high, so not a huge receiving profile either. So that's why they kind of, again, outside that top 12 for me. But yeah, I think there's some consensus here. So, you know, you're confirming some things I'm saying. So it makes it seem like, okay, I think I know what I'm talking about here. But I think, you know, the biggest key, again, be draft capital, team fit. So we're definitely going to be looking for these running backs into the NFL draft and see where they end up. But good to get to know them and know their strengths and weaknesses beforehand.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty crazy. That's only a few days away. I mean, we're obviously very excited down here in Jacksonville.
And of course, you could follow along with us on Twitter at @FPC_fantasypod. Your co-hosts individually, Brad's at @TheRundown_BH. I'm at Senra Says. And of course, download the Full Press Coverage app. It's available for free on Android and iOS stores. Really important this time of year to get all that draft news and coverage. And you'll get access to all the articles that are written before the draft and during the draft and after the draft and all that happening. So now's a great time to, again, download for free that Full Press Coverage app. And shout out to PA the Second on Twitter at @PA_II_official for the song Melody, which we use as our intro and outro music. So really appreciate that. And Brad, really appreciated talking to you about running backs. I always love talking running backs, but you know, get your insight is great. Were there any final thoughts for the listeners?
No, not really. I appreciate you, putting all this together and breaking down the categories. I think it answers a lot of questions and can get people ready for what these rookies have to offer.
Yeah, and we'll be continuing the rookie series next time with quarterbacks on tight ends. That'll be part 3 of this series as part of the Full Press Fantasy Pod.